You're listening to U Talk, part of the Torn by Sports and Blog Talk Radio Networks. Providing unbiased opinions on all things Utah football and basketball. Join Andy and Patrick weekly as they bring you up to date on all things Ute.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to Ute Talk. It is Monday, December 19th, and this is episode 26. My name is Andy, and I hope you all are doing well. I am joined by my co-host and writer for Torn by Sports Network, Patrick. How are we doing today, Patrick?
Doing great.
Good. So thank you, everybody, for tuning in to the show. We greatly appreciate it. If this is your first time, welcome. Ute Talk Podcast is part of the Torn by Sports and Blog Talk Radio Networks, and we produce this once a week for your enjoyment. Please add us to your favorite RSS feed, Google Play, Stitcher Radio, iTunes, and you can also follow us on Twitter at Ute Talk Podcast. Now let's get into the show. We've got a big one today for you, as this will be our final show of the year. So we're going to preview a lot of different things, the Diamond Head Classic, and recap some of the games that have the past, and I'm going to preview the Foster Farms Bowl as well. So let's get right into it. Our Ute news, Running Utes had a game on December 17th, this past Saturday, against Prairie View A&M Panthers. And Utes win that one 92-60. And we'll get into a further breakdown of that in a moment. But great job by the Running Utes. And Cedric Bearfield and David Kolek finally made their appearance. they were able to get involved and play the game. And it was great to see them out there. And this team suddenly went from not having a lot of depth or experience to having a lot.
Yeah, it was good to see those guys out there and, see them mix it up a little bit. And it wasn't the toughest of opponents for them.
But sure.
It was good to get that team together as a whole and see what they can do.
Absolutely. Kind of get their feet wet and gel a little bit more against competition besides themselves. So next up on our Ute news, a couple of signees/verbal commitments. First one is Corion Ballard, who is the safety from Blinn College. JUCO transfer. He is officially signed. He has signed his national letter of intent. He's a 200-pound safety, number one rated safety in the JUCO ranks. And very excited to see him here with the Utes and, you know, take the place of Marcus Williams.
Yeah, I thought it was a great signing for the Utes. I mean, the guy's a four-star. You know, he had some offers from Oklahoma State, Nebraska, Texas Tech, and he ultimately chose the Utes. And, you know, and with the potential that Marcus Williams could leave for the NFL, he could, you know, this is a guy who could come in right away and be, you know, a day one starter or even a big contributor. As maybe a backup to Fogel or whatnot. But so great signing by the Utes and excited to see this guy come aboard.
Absolutely. It'll be very nice to get some of these three borderline four-star guys into the program. And it's great to see kind of we were towards the tail end of the Mountain West. We were two-star, borderline three-star athletes, and now we're getting three borderline four. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, recruiting has improved drastically over the years since they've joined the Pac-12, and now the Utes, you know, they're right in there with a lot of the other top schools for, you know, some of the top recruits in the country. So it's good to see, and you know, props to the coaches for doing a good job on the recruiting trail. And you know, and Utah's a great place to play. I think a lot of people are seeing that as Utah continues to put guys in the NFL and continues to be a top team in the country. It's a great place to play, and the coaches here can coach you up to, you know, make the NFL one day.
Absolutely. As much as some of our fans despise coaching decisions, they definitely do a great job in developing talent.
Yeah, especially on the defensive side of the ball, especially. Those coaches do a great job.
They do.
They know what it takes to take these guys to the next level. And so it's exciting. Recruiting keeps on getting better.
Absolutely. And we have a verbal commit from quarterback Jack Tuttle, 6'4", 195, and he will be the class of 18. So not this next season, but the following is when we'll see him. And he is a four-star QB out of Mission Hills High School in California. And he's a big get for the Utes. Again, verbal commitment, but what do you got for us there, Patrick?
Yeah, Tuttle, you know, he had some offers from Colorado, LSU, Nebraska, Wisconsin. So he was a, you know, highly coveted kid. Mm-hmm. And the Utes were able to sign him. He's 6'4", look about 190 something, he said. And then, you know, like to see him put some size on, maybe get in the 200s. And who knows, he might grow another foot or two over the next year. But a good get. He's a four-star QB coming out of California. And, you know, the Utes have, over the past few seasons, they've really brought aboard some good QBs. It's going to be an exciting competition. You'll have Huntley, I mean, Jason Shelley, Tuttle. I mean, they just keep getting these good QBs that, and hopefully they can start developing them a little bit better and get the offense going.
Absolutely. Well, yeah, I mean, next year, 2017, you'll have essentially a quarterback battle between Williams and Huntley and possibly Shelley. The year after that, you're looking at Huntley and Shelley and possibly Tuttle. So we could be in for some interesting quarterback controversy here.
Yeah, like some good battles to look forward to, but with some good competition. So it's going to be interesting to see how it all shakes out at the quarterback position over the next few years. But I think, you know, if the Utes keep landing these four-star, three-star quarterbacks, I think they're going to be in pretty good hands offensively.
Absolutely. And just another little tidbit of info here. A little bit earlier today, Texas actually signed a four-star running back. Let's see, Tonil Carter, who backed out of his commitment of Georgia. He's a four-star running back. And the reason why I bring this one up is because Eno Benjamin, who is a huge Texas recruit, wanted a Texas offer. What does this commitment by Carter do for Benjamin's chances, or I guess Ute's chances of maybe landing Benjamin?
I think it gives the Utes a good shot at landing him. Honestly, unless he wants to go potentially battle it out for a position. I mean, even if he comes to Utah, he's going to be battling out for a position. But I think it honestly gives the Utes a much better shot at hopefully landing him. I think he's a really talented back, and I think he could come to Utah and do some great things. Utes always are able to produce great running backs, so he would, you know, it would be great for him to come and be another, you know, great running back for the Utes.
Absolutely. And then you and I didn't talk about this, but I was just barely thinking about it. And so kind of a rapid fire question here. Earlier today, it was mentioned that Leonard Fournette and Christian McCaffrey would not be participating in their bowl games. I have many different thoughts on this, and I wanted to get your opinion, Patrick. What are your thoughts on these guys, you know, coming out to their team saying, hey, thanks for helping me get this far, but I'm not going to be there for the final battle?
I think that moving forward, I think it's going to be kind of a trend. If guys have an opportunity to make the NFL, I think you're going to see a lot more college guys foregoing playing in the bowl games, especially if it's the bowl games that really don't mean a whole lot.
Sure.
But you know, I mean, I can't blame them. I mean, I don't, you know, Stanford's bowl game really isn't for anything.
Yeah.
LSU's bowl game. Are they even in a bowl game? I don't know.
If
they are, it's probably for nothing. I don't think they had a very good season. But, I mean, I don't blame them. I mean, they risk getting injured and missing out on, you know, some big contracts in the NFL or getting drafted high. But, I can see the other side, too, where, you know, you might want to finish the season with your guys and, you know, finish the season. Looks like they're in the Citrus Bowl against Louisville, LSU. So not really, you know, a big bowl game, but
kind of a big opponent though.
Yeah.
Lamar Jackson.
True. Yeah. It'd be a good game. But you know, I can see, I, you know, probably expect that from Fournette just cause he's kind of a diva. I didn't expect it from McCaffrey, but
yeah,
I can see where he's coming from. And I just think it's going to be one of those things that's going to start happening a lot more as guys get, you know, realize they don't want to risk injury,
yeah,
you know, in their last bowl game, especially if it isn't for anything.
Yeah. And I'm paraphrasing here a little bit, but Ezekiel Elliott, who had 1 year left of eligibility, and opted to go to the NFL draft. He did play in his bowl game, but he came out and said that he would die to have one last game, you know, with his brothers, his family, in reference to his, you know, college team, Ohio State Buckeyes. And, you know, with that, you know, he's essentially kind of calling out these two, Fournette and McCaffrey, saying, hey, you're kind of leaving your team high and dry. That's not cool. One of my buddies who was on the football team for the Utes during the Sugar Bowl, he had posted kind of a similar sentiment that he would be ticked off if one of his teammates did something like that. And just kind of feels like you're leaving your family high and dry. I'm in that category. I'm going to have to disagree with you, Patrick, but, you know, I think I understand that the bowl games aren't for a whole lot, but it's hard to be a fan of a player that's, you know, going to be there the whole way through. And then this final bowl game, just kind of like, I'm not really going to do it anymore. I've got kind of bigger and better things. And essentially just shun the rest of his team. And that's how I feel about it. But I just wanted to get your thoughts on that.
Yeah, I mean, but, you know, money does talk.
Money speaks.
if they know they're, you know, have maybe going to get drafted high or,
sure,
know, or early.
Can they just take out those insurance policies?
Yeah, I mean, they could do that. But, but you have to look at coaches too. I mean, coaches do it all the time.
And I hate that.
They get a new job and then they leave the team
before the bowl game.
Before the bowl game.
So. That's ridiculous to me. I don't. Yeah, I agree there.
Yeah, I just think it's gonna start being a growing trend, as you know, because you know, players are selfish, and you know, if they have a chance for money, they're gonna
sure
do whatever it takes to, you know, get theirs. And I think you're going to start seeing it as a growing trend, and then it's just going to kind of get out of control a little bit, I think.
Yeah. I mean, I don't think if LSU and Stanford's playing in the playoff, you see him do it.
Yeah.
Yeah. You know, so that's, it's, I don't know. It's a double-edged sword, I guess, but I tell you what, if it does become a trend in future years, you're not going to have a whole lot of probably viewership or attendance at these bowl games.
True. Yeah.
Which is going to hurt.
I agree with that. Yeah.
Maybe that'll rejuvenate the discussion to pay some of these players.
Yeah. Well, I think someone said it. They kind of liken it to like the Pro Bowl where, you know, the players, you know, they get voted in, but then they don't want to play in it, so they don't go.
Sure.
Because they don't want to get hurt or whatnot, but.
You know, fair enough.
I think it's going to be one of those things that's just going to keep getting worse, and more guys are going to start doing it now that, you know, two of the top guys in the country have done it. People are going to want to follow in their footsteps.
Yeah. It would be interesting to see who else, the domino effect of this, movement here, I guess. So moving on, that's all we've got for our Ute news. We'll get into our recap of the Running Utes versus Prairie View. I was there at the game. Patrick, I'm assuming you watched it on TV.
Yep, I did.
Cool. So Utes win 92-60. First half, Utah puts up 52-25. Second half, Utah's 40-35. So at 92-60, all around, Utah looked like the better team. They were, you know, applying themselves both offensively and defensively. Turnovers are still an issue. Utah still needs to get that under control. But what are your first reactions to the game? And then also Cedric Bearfield and David Collette making their first of the year appearance.
I thought it was a good game for the Utes. You know, it wasn't the toughest of opponents for them, but, yep. You know, I thought they played well as a team, and a lot of guys got some good playing time, and it was good to see, you know, Collette in there. I know he didn't play a lot. I think he only played like 17, 18 minutes.
But, yeah, he had some early foul trouble.
Yeah. But he showed, you know, he had 11 points, 9 rebounds, and he showed what, you know, he could be that inside presence that the Utes were kind of lacking at the start of the season. And then, you know, Cedric Bearfield came in and gave the Utes a spark off the bench and gave them some outside shooting that they'd, you know, been struggling with a little bit this season. So it was good to see him come together as a whole. I know Prairie View isn't tough, but I'm excited to see what this team can do with some, you know, tougher competition and into Pac-12 play.
Absolutely. Yeah, David Collette came in and scored the first 6 points for the Utes, all inside, you know, kind of up and under, layups, you know, dunks, kind of a mixed bag. But definitely gave the Utes the inside presence that they were missing. So your starting lineup ended up being Bonham, Kuzma, Daniels, Collette was moved into the starting lineup, and also JoJo Zamora replacing Parker Van Dyke, and which I found is an interesting move. I liked it. JoJo has done really well every game. He's kind of been a steady contributor in all aspects of the game. But Utah really got off to a quick start. Collette got involved. This, with Collette being in the starting lineup, that pushed Rawson and or Jace Johnson to that bench unit. And I really like that because it allows Jace to really develop against good talent, but not starting quality talent. And Jace is a redshirt freshman, you know, a year of development, you know, in this role of off the bench will allow him to come in next year and really start to kind of take over that that middle presence. And I'm really excited to see his development over the next couple of years. But what's interesting is it seems like the first, you know, 8 games of the year, there was zero inside presence, you know, just kind of little fast break layups or something like that. But all of a sudden Collette appears and everybody was kind of getting involved. Jace Johnson, if I remember correctly, had, I believe, what, 10 points? What do you have?
11 points,
yeah. So Jace Johnson was getting involved. He was 5 of 6, and he was 1 of 2 on free throws. So he was getting involved down low, and it's just kind of funny how, oh, suddenly Collette's here. Now everything is happening inside.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with you there on Johnson. It's good to have him come off the bench and kind of, you know, play against, you know, the second string or the second units of the opposing team. It'll definitely allow him to get more comfortable, get more confident, and get a little bit tougher and until he can take over, you know, that middle role. Maybe next season he does that. But I do like Rawson off the bench as well. I think Van Dyke's a bench guy.
Yep.
Someone who could maybe come in and hit a couple shots for you a game. I don't really think he's a starter. I think you'll see Barefield. I mean, Barefield got starter minutes. I think he played like
29 minutes. Yeah.
He got starter minutes. I think eventually you might see him, you know, take over one of those spots in the starting lineup. But the Utes, that definitely gave the Utes some depth. I mean, you know, Devin Daniels, he didn't play that great, but he didn't play that much.
Mm-hmm.
But the game before that against Xavier, he had a great game.
And then, yeah.
Like JoJo Tomorrow, like you said, he's been pretty fairly consistent in his playing. And then, you know, Bonham is kind of continuing. Bonham has good games. Then he's kind of an up and down player. But
yeah.
Kuzma played well. 18 points, 15 rebounds. So,
and 6 assists.
Yeah. So, but I want to see Kuzma do that against tougher competition. I know he can do it against, you know, the whatever Montana State or
yeah.
these, you know, no name teams that they're playing. I want to see him do it at, you know, in Pac-12 player against, you know, a Xavier or Butler mm-hmm. or whatnot. But it definitely gave the Utes some depth there. And, you know, with them playing such a soft schedule, it's given guys, you know, a lot of playing experience,
yeah.
which they might not have got otherwise. So mm-hmm. that'll definitely help them once conference play comes.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I'm really excited for Barefield. You know, I think he'll probably take over for Zamora would be my guess. Zamora can definitely be that scoring punch in that second unit with, you know, he and Rawson and, you know, Van Dyke. I think those are three really good bench players. but, yeah, Barefield came in, airballed his first shot as a U. And then he made his next three-pointers. Ended the game with 18 points, 4 assists, 1 rebound, and 5 turnovers. He's known for his handles, his hand ball control, but he had 5 turnovers. So look for that number to come down quite a bit. I was there watching the women's game before the men's game, and he was out just dribbling, you know, the whole... almost the entire warm-up. All the other players are shooting baskets and whatnot, and he's just over there in the corner dribbling 2 balls at a time, just between his legs, figure eight. He's all over the place. He really takes pride in his handles. And then even after the game, he was still out there practicing. So he's got a great work ethic, and I'm really excited to see what type of player that he can become.
Yeah, for sure. I thought he looked good, and especially for his first game, I thought he played really well, and I think he'll continue to improve. And
it's been a full year for him.
And how about the aren't the Lady Utes? Aren't they 10-0?
They are 10-0. Yeah, they beat Weber State as well, and that was a really good game. So, well, that's all we've got for our breakdown for Prairie View. Again, Utes win that one 92-60. Utes move to 7-2 on the season. And we are moving on to the preview of the Diamond Head Classic. Now, this one's got, excuse me, 8 teams, including the Utes. So you've got Hawaii, Illinois State, San Francisco, Southern Mississippi, San Diego State, Stephen F. Austin, and Tulsa. Those are the 8 teams competing in the Diamond Head Classic, which is in the Stan Sheriff Center, or Arena, I guess, in Honolulu, Hawaii. And, excuse me. And so, Utes will play San Francisco, 9 p.m. Mountain Time on December 22nd. So that is in 3 days. So that is, what is that, Thursday?
Yeah.
So Thursday the 22nd, if we win, or when we win, we will be playing the winner of Illinois State and Hawaii. And then if we win that one, we'll go into the championship round, which will be played on the 25th of December. And so Christmas Day, and that'll be against one of the other 4 teams, Tulsa, Stephen F. Austin, Southern Mississippi, and San Diego State. And so we're going to preview San Francisco, that opponent we know for sure we are playing. And then depending on if we win or lose, we will play the winner or loser of Illinois State and Hawaii. And so we'll preview those 3 teams, give you an outlook, And then because we're so unsure on the other potential championship game, we'll leave that one to the imagination. But then we're also going to preview our first Pac-12 game on January 1st against Colorado, the Buffaloes. So let's get into it here. The San Francisco Dons, University of San Francisco, they are sitting at 7-2 on the season. They are part of our the West Coast Conference, which includes Gonzaga, St. Mary's, Portland, the team down south, Loyola Marymount. Wow, that's a hard one for me to say. San Diego, Santa Clara, Pepperdine, and Pacific. So they're sitting at 7-2. They're third in the conference right now, in the West Coast Conference. excuse me. They have losses against, let's see, Eastern Washington and the Portland State Vikings. So those are their two losses. Their wins here. So that's why my computer's pulling up the wins for San Francisco. They average very similar numbers to the Utes. their points per game are 81. The Utes are at 84. They allow 70. The Utes a little bit better at 64. They shoot about 51%. Utes shoot about 50. Their rebound, about 37 rebounds. Utes, 46. Both teams average about 15 assists a game. San Francisco averages almost three blocks. Utes, about five. San Francisco averages about seven steals. Utes average about five a game. So what are your thoughts about the San Francisco Dons and kind of what we might see from them?
They seem, just from looking at them, they look, you know, like they're, the West Coast Conference always produces a two or three tough teams. Mm-hmm. I mean, Gonzaga's always one, and then they always have a couple more. So they come from a fairly good conference, and being 7-2, even in their two losses, they were in those games. They didn't get blown out or anything.
Yeah.
They only lost, I think they lost one by six and one by four or whatnot.
Yep, exactly.
But I think, you know, they're fairly similar to the Utes, like you mentioned. And, you know, it's definitely a game that the Utes could lose if they don't come to play.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, I haven't really watched much of San Francisco's game, but I'll definitely watch them against the Utes. And, you know, I think it'll be a competitive game for them.
Absolutely. Excuse me. So their top player, as far as points goes, let's see here.
Looks like it's
Ronnie Boyce. Yeah. Yep. Yeah. Boyce or Boise. Probably Boyce. 6'3" guard. Senior out of Oklahoma. He is currently averaging 18 points a game, 5 rebounds, 2 assists, and almost a steal a game, shooting 36% from 3, 47% field goal percentage. So he's going to be kind of the player that the Utes want to focus on, rebounding-wise and assist-wise, both the same person, small forward, Nate Renfro, sophomore out of Tucson, Arizona, 6'7", 186. He only averages about 6 points a game, but he's 6 rebounds and about 3.5 assists a game. So he's kind of getting involved in a little bit of everything. So two players that the Utes might want to keep their eye on and make sure that they D up.
Yeah, and these teams that they're gonna play, these are kind of those scrappy teams who, you know, they have some pretty decent players on them, and so the Utes definitely got to come to play because these guys will make it competitive in every game that, you know, San Francisco's had. It's been a competitive game for them. So
absolutely. So that's what we've got for San Francisco. Again, that game is Thursday, December 22nd, 9 p.m. Mountain Time. And this one will be on ESPNU. So most, I think most cable offerings have that channel as part of the basic package. So be sure to tune in. Or if you want to go to Hawaii for the holidays, then, you know, by all means, enjoy. So moving on, our next possible opponent will either be Illinois State or Hawaii Rainbow Warriors. And we'll preview Illinois State Redbirds right now. Another decent team, part of the MVC conference. They are currently sitting at 6-3 with losses against... let's see here. TCU by 9. Tulsa by 2. That's funny that they also play Tulsa in the tournament here. Yep. So they've already played Tulsa. And then their first loss was against Murray State. And so Murray State by 3, TCU by 9, and then Tulsa by 2. So they're 6-3. Another good team. Illinois State is part of the same conference that Wichita State is in, which is normally the team that gets the one bid to the NCAA tournament. I can't imagine we'll see another team come out of there, but who knows? You never know.
Yeah, they always seem to be those number 5 seed or number 12 seeds, and mm-hmm. they knock off the number 5 seed. But definitely, if the Utes can win, I don't know. Want to look at Hawaii and see kind of how Hawaii is, and I don't know if Hawaii will be able to beat them. I don't know how good Hawaii is this season, but.
Well, yeah. So, yeah, Illinois State, their scorers here. Paris Lee, 16 points a game, 3 rebounds, 6 assists, 2 steals, shooting 54% field goal percentage, 86 from the free throw line, and 56 from the three-point line. So he's definitely their main scorer, their main contributor, in multiple facets of the game. Deonte Hawkins, another one, 15 points, 7 rebounds, 1 assist, 1 steal, 44% field goal, 44 from the 3. Mikhail McIntosh, 13 points a game, 6 boards, 1 assist, 1 steal. Again, another 40-plus 3-point percent shooter. We could see a lot of threes here in this game. So from both teams, I know Utah seemingly likes to settle for some threes. Some good contributors for Illinois State. They seemingly average about 77 points a game, 76. They've won 6, they've lost 3, and they've all been 70 points or above in those. So, look for them to make some noise in this tournament possibly.
Yeah, I just looking at Hawaii a little bit as you're talking about them. I mean, Hawaii's 4-5, not really too good of a team. So I would probably pick Illinois State to beat them.
To advance,
To advance. And then, I would definitely pick the Utes to advance over San Francisco and, set up.
You that homer.
Set up that game. I mean, the Utes, looking at the teams in this tournament, I think the toughest team for the Utes might, maybe be if they make it to the championship game against maybe like a San Diego State or whatnot. I think San Francisco will be a tough game for them, but I think they'll pull it off. But, I think Illinois State will be able to beat Hawaii. I don't think, just looking at Hawaii and their team right now, it doesn't look like they're too great of a team. Yeah. I know it's kind of their home turf, but I definitely can see the Utes moving on and Illinois State moving on. And then, you know, I can see the Utes probably taking this if they can put together a good run.
Sure. And this will be a good show for the Utes. You know, three games in four nights. So kind of gets them a little taste of tournament action. You know, some of these guys have never had it before. And, you know, so it should give them a lot of good experience in that respect. So moving on to the Hawaii Rainbow Warriors, the home team, the host team, I guess, if you will. Currently, like Patrick said, sitting at 4-5. They're part of the Big West Conference. Not a big conference at all by any means. UC Davis, Cal Poly, UC Irvine, Cal State Fullerton, CSU Northridge, Long Beach State, UC Riverside, and UC Santa Barbara. So not a big conference at all. Their top scorer, Noah Allen, sitting at about 15 points a game, almost playing 30 minutes, shooting about 45% from the field. Sharif Drama is their leading assist giver or passer outer, whatever you want to call him. averages about 10 points a game and 3 assists a game. And then field goal percentage, Ido Flashier, center, averages about 5 points a game, but he's shooting 63%. So most of his stuff is coming off of putbacks and just little easy buckets. So Hawaii hasn't played a whole lot of teams. Their biggest opponent was number 5 ranked UNC, University of North Carolina, and they only lost by 15 points at home against UNC, keep in mind. But other than that, Hawaii just hasn't played many people. A lot of no-name teams. I'm looking at their schedule. FAU, Texas State, Troy. Let's see, is that, I believe, Seton Hall? What is that one? Princeton. So not a whole lot of big-name teams that they're getting beat by. But you never know. You know, with some of these host teams, sometimes they come out and surprise you.
Yeah, with the, you know, especially with it being on their home turfs, you know, they could get a little bit more confidence, so they could definitely maybe make a run. But I don't know. I don't know that I see it happening. I don't know why. I don't think they're going to make it too far in this tournament.
not feeling confident, huh? Well, let me look. I just want to quickly look at the other part of the bracket here, just to see how some of these teams have done. And you've got Tulsa. Tulsa is sitting at 5-4 on the year. Let's see. You've got Stephen F. Austin. Let's see here. You got Stephen F. Austin sitting at 4-5 on the year.
Yeah, and then San Diego State's 5-4. They're first in the Mountain West.
Okay, yep. 5-4, San Diego State. And then, let's see, with Southern Mississippi. If I can sell Mississippi correctly, they're sitting at 7-6. So really, really the Utes are, or kind of our side of the bracket with Illinois State.
Yeah.
They might be the second best team.
Yeah. I mean, the Utes, San Francisco, Illinois State, that seems like the tougher side of the bracket. Yeah. For sure. I mean, San Diego State always seems to put together a pretty decent team. I think Coach Fisher, been there forever, so he always seems to put together a somewhat, you know, competitive team. But yeah, it definitely looks like, you know, the Ute side of the bracket, especially this first game against San Francisco. That looks, those, like, to me, those are the probably the one and two teams in this in this tournament. Either, I think either one of those teams, whoever wins that game, I think will definitely take it.
Okay. Good to know. I think the Utes have a very good chance to win out in this tournament. I would be shocked if we didn't make it to the championship game. So again, University of San Francisco versus the Running Utes, Thursday, December 22nd. That is at 9 p.m. Mountain Time. Your following game is out of the winner of Illinois State and Hawaii. That is Friday the 23rd, so the following day, and that one would be at 8 p.m. Also ESPNU, and then the championship game would be at 6 p.m. Mountain Time on Sunday, Christmas Day, December 25th, and that one is on ESPN2. Oh, excuse me, the second game that you could potentially play in would be ESPN2, not you, sorry. ESPNU, ESPN2, ESPN2. So look for those games. Should be a good little tournament for the Utes. Three more games for Bearfield and Colette to kind of get their feet wet before we move into Pac-12 play, which the Pac-12 is looking mighty good this year. And there's quite a few teams making some noise.
Yeah, I mean, UCLA looks great. I mean, Arizona, a lot of good teams. So I think, you know, the Utes can will definitely make it competitive. I don't know that they'll win the Pac-12, but I think they'll definitely.
It'll be tough this year.
Yeah, it'll be to tough, be but they'll make it competitive. I mean, they were competitive against Xavier. Mm-hmm. They put up a lot of fight against Xavier, so it was good to see that they have that in them. So it's gonna be interesting to see how it shakes out. I think UCLA is probably the team to beat. So it's gonna be fun though.
Looking at the Pac-12 conference standings as it sits right now, you've got UCLA at 12-0. They are ranked number 2 in the country. USC 10-0, Arizona 10-2, Oregon 10-2. And Arizona and Oregon were the kind of the top teams, you know, obviously the past couple of years. And, you know, this year they've already have two losses, whereas the Southern California teams are undefeated right now. Fifth in the Pac-12 is California at 9-2. You've got Utah 7-2, Colorado 8-3, Stanford 7-3, Arizona State and Washington State 6-5, Washington 5-5, and Oregon State 3-9. So, you know, really, UCLA at number one, all the way down to Stanford at number 8. I mean, Stanford's 7-3, and they're the 8th best in the Pac-12 right now.
Yeah,
so I mean, it's a lot of top tough talent in UCLA, in the Pac-12 right now. So it will be interesting to see how the season plays out. As we get in here to our preview for Colorado, Colorado Buffaloes sitting at 8-3. This game is on ESPNU, 4:30 p.m., January 1st, so New Year's Day, the Sunday, John M. Huntsman Center, and should be a good game, always is with Colorado. They've had, usually all their games have kind of come right down to the wire, regardless of, you know, how what records show for either team, and kind of looking at their stats here. So Utah, 84 points a game. Colorado, about 75. Utah's allowing 64. Colorado, 66 a game. Utah shooting a little bit better, 49, almost 50%. Colorado shooting about 43. Colorado rebounding about 41. Utah with 46, Colorado with 13 assists, Utah with about 16, about 4.5 steals a game, 4.5 blocks a game, and about 5 steals a game for both teams. So fairly even matched on some of those numbers. Utah definitely putting up more points and allowing less, and a better rebounding team with Utah's height. looking at their players here, so Derek White, who's their guard, about 30 minutes a game, 52%, averages about 15 points a game. Derek White is also their leading assist getter with 3.5 a game, and their field goal percent as well with 52%. So he's going to be the player that the Utes will definitely want to kind of lock down and shut him down. Xavier Johnson is the other player to look out for. He averages 15 points, 6 rebounds, and he's shooting about 40% from three. So, you know, it's going to be another grinded out game. Colorado will want to come into the Huntsman Center and get the first Pac-12 win.
Yeah, starting off the season with the rivalry,
yeah,
the rivalry game. So it's going to be a good game. I mean, Colorado-Utah, if I can remember correctly, they've always, you know, played fairly close in basketball.
Yeah.
Always been competitive. So I think, you know, this year will be no different. It'll be a competitive game, be a good game. Both teams are pretty fairly evenly matched. And so it'll be a good way to kick off Pac-12 play with your rival, get that out of the way, and then move on for the rest of the season. But hopefully these can get that W on the first and, you know, get some confidence there going into the rest of the conference play.
Absolutely. So that game, ESPNU, Sunday, January 1st, ringing in the new year, 4:30 p.m., either be there at the Huntsman Center or watch it on ESPNU. I, unfortunately, will be missing the game as I will be in San Francisco for the bowl game and for the Running Ute football team.
Yep, so it'll be a good way to kick off the new year with the rival and get a victory over them, so can have those bragging rights
for a while. We need them since they beat us in football.
Yeah, true.
So look for that game. Should be a good one for the Running Utes to really see how we match up against some quality opponents.
Yeah, and Colorado, they lost to BYU, so can't be losing to
that's right,
to them since they lost to BYU either.
True that. So moving on in our show here, we will be getting into our Ute Q's segment.
Now time for Ute Q's, where we take your questions from Twitter and email and we answer them weekly. Tweet us at Ute Talk Podcast or email utetalk@gmail.com.
For those of you that do not know what our Ute Q's segment is, this is your opportunity and our opportunity to ask you questions from our Twitter account at Ute Talk Podcast. You can also email us, utetalk@gmail.com, and use the hashtag UteQs, hashtag UTEQS, and we will ask questions. We want your responses, so make sure that you participate, and we'll give you some shout-outs here on the show. So our first question, excuse me, as the sixth year in the Pac-12 comes to a close for Utah football, how do you feel as a fan? Recruiting, schedule, offense, defense, and record. And looking at our responses here, S_Glaus18, optimistic, excited, rising recruiting, some big victories, but need to seize our chances. At Grayed Out Jedi, feel like our time will come. We've been right there the last 2 years. Frustrated, sure. Optimistic, you bet. At Rick Caps 3, being a fan means taking the good with the bad. We need a stronger O that 100% complements the killer D. Go Utes. At JDUBU_23, tired of watching missed opportunities in November. Not real excited for the bowl game. And then at Tim Utes for Life, good except for the continual November meltdown. I just think we run out of gas and we need to address that. So what are your thoughts, Patrick, on our listeners' responses and their thoughts to our question?
Yeah, I thought there were some good responses there. I do agree. It's, you know, the past, especially the past couple seasons have been pretty heartbreaking. And in November with, you know, all that was on the line for the Utes, and they just couldn't seem to pull through. But overall, as a whole, I mean, 6 years in the Pac-12, the Utes have gotten, you know, they've improved in recruiting. They continually, you know, are bringing in those, you know, guys that, you know, they wouldn't have had a chance with, you know, on the Mountain West or even when they first came into the Pac-12. So that's absolutely good to see. Recruiting continues to improve. You know, defense has been steady all 6 years. Been, you know, it's been the strength, you know, defense and special teams has been the strength of the Utes. Offensively, you know, they just need to figure out what they want to do offensively and get it put together and go for it. I don't know, you know, if that's running the spread or if it's switching it to something different or whatnot, but overall, and I mean the record, I mean the Utes have won what, like 30 games, and you know, since, you know, in the past 3 years or
yeah, I'm trying to look up exactly the records over the last couple of years, so give me one moment.
Yeah, but I mean, you know, with them continually winning and continually showing that they're, you know, a team to be dealt with in the nation, they're going to keep getting those recruits and keep getting talented guys to come here, and they're just going to continue to rise, and you know, eventually they're going to get over that hump somehow in November and bring home a title.
Absolutely. So 2011, Utah's first year in the Pac-12, overall record was 8-5. Very optimistic, and you know, I didn't think that we were going to do 8-5 our first year. We had a couple close losses. I remember the USC one on a blocked field goal. Next 2 years, 2012, 2013, 5-7. So kind of a huge letdown of two consecutive years. 2014, 9-4. So things were looking up. 2015, 10-3. And then obviously here in 2016, we're currently sitting at 9-3. So, I mean, the record over the last 6 years has been much better than I would have thought for Pac-12 competition. And you can say, you know, oh, such and such team had a down year, you know, whatever it is. But in the end, you know, a lot of these teams are playing the same type of competition, and they're all 4-star, 5-star, I mean, mid 3-star athletes, you know, and it doesn't really matter whether it's UCLA or USC or Washington, you know, and you know, these teams, they all play well, they all beat up on each other. So the record is, you know, I think 9-3 is a good baseline, you know, and yeah. I think that's what the Utes need to shoot for every year. It's kind of the floor. Anything less than that, I think is a disappointment. Obviously we want to be in Rose Bowl contention and playoff contention. The offense and defense has been great every year, you know. Mountain West, we were even, you know, competing top defensively, you know, in the nation. So defensively, it hasn't really changed. Offensively, things have changed in the Pac-12 quite a bit. You know, we had Norm Chow, we had Brian Johnson, we had David Christensen, a lot of different offensive coordinators that we've gone through. I like the consistency from last year to this year with Harding and Roderick. I would love to see a specific quarterback coach and move Roderick to just offensive play calling so he can really dial that down. Scheduling, obviously the Pac-12 schedule is speaks for itself. Definitely some tough competition. I would love to see the Utes have better non-conference, a better A game. You know, they have their A, B, and C games. I would definitely love to see a better A game. Last year, the A game was Michigan. This year is BYU. Quite a bit of a difference there. Yeah. You know, I'd love to see a Big 10 or Big 12 top tier team as kind of that A game, or heck, even SEC team in a neutral field. You know, yeah. That would be nice to see. And then recruiting, we touched base on it earlier on the show. You know, we've gone from 2-star borderline 3-stars to 3-star borderline 4-stars getting into the program, you know, and we already have a couple this year and a couple for future years. So the recruiting has stepped up immensely. Coaches are figuring out how to recruit better. They're figuring out what kids they're latching onto these kids faster and really getting them involved with the family atmosphere that is up, you know, up there on the hill for the University of Utah. So as a fan, as a fan myself, you know, I feel pretty good. You know, I think 6 years into the Pac-12, it's been decent. We've been to, you know, several different bowl games, the Sun Bowl, Vegas Bowl twice, and now we're going to the Foster Farms Bowl. You know, and at one point we had a chance to be in the Rose Bowl, which, yeah. You know, there's a lot of opportunities now that we're in the Pac-12. So I'm very optimistic, frustrated a little bit with the November meltdowns, like a few of our listeners have said, but very optimistic.
Yeah, I totally agree. It's, you know, as a fan, it, you know, it's they've done a lot better than I probably had anticipated them doing, especially, I mean, the, you know, this last couple seasons, they were right there. They had, you know, ample opportunities to win the South both seasons. Yep. And, you know, go to the title game and, you know, maybe go to the Rose Bowl or an even bigger bowl. They just couldn't get over that hump. But I don't know that I mentioned scheduling. You know, I loved that game against Michigan. I thought that was an awesome game. I'd love to see more of that.
Yep.
I didn't really care for the SUU game. you know, BYU, I don't mind playing them, but it's not something I really
say it. Just really say
care
it.
About. I mean, I like the rivalry, but sure. I just, you know, I like seeing the Utes play other teams. I love seeing them play Michigan. That was a fun game.
It was.
I'd love to see him play with all the Florida guys they have. I'd love to see him play a SEC team or, yeah. You know,
even like a Florida State, maybe. Yeah. ACC.
But scheduling, I mean, you know, I would love to see him, you know, maybe, you know, get rid of the SUU. And, you know, I know they have a tough conference schedule, so I know it's hard to, you know, really, you know.
And we're the only conference that does 9 games.
True. So I know they kind of have that conundrum, but I'd love to see them get another, you know, Michigan or, like you said, another, you know, maybe SEC team or whatnot. But yeah, I'm impressed. They've continued to improve, and recruits are starting to see that, and that's only going to bring more recruits in, and then they're just going to keep getting better. And I mean, coaches are somewhat evolving. I know offensively they need to get it together, but you know, eventually they'll hopefully do that. And I do like your idea of bringing in a quarterback coach. I think that can only help. I just haven't seen the progression in the quarterbacks over the past, you know, few year, or even, you know, I think when Norm Chow was there, that was, you know, he had John Hayes, and, you know, John Hayes played pretty well under Norm Chow.
Yeah.
I think that was really the last really progression we've seen a quarterback position. And, you know, I'd love to see a quarterback specific coach so they can, you know, get that progression that they need to take it to the next level.
Absolutely. So our next question that we posted, predict the score in game ball for the Foster Farms Bowl against Indiana. At Rick Caps 3, 35-21 Utes, game ball to Hunter Dimmick, go Utes. He's the only response to that question. I think it could be now an offensive scoring game for the Utes. You know, I think Joe Williams is going to want to make a name for himself, or one possible last push for NFL grading. And, you know, Troy Williams, I think after a couple weeks of some rest and kind of healing his body. I think he's going to want to come out and be like, hey, you know, this is my team. We're going to lead us to a victory, and I'm going to show you what I can do going into 2017. You know, I'm not going to let go of the reins yet. So I'm thinking maybe 38, 41 points. And I would say, man, Utah's D is getting healthy. I would say maybe 17. So 38 to 17. Let's go with that. Game ball. Combo of the Williams.
Williams boys.
Yeah. Can't pick one. What about you?
I'm going to say 35 to 24. My game ball. I'm going to go with Corey Butler Bird. I think they're going to utilize him a lot in this game and kind of showcase what he can do, which they should have done all season, but they couldn't figure out how. But definitely, I think the Utes will be able to score on them. I think Indiana's, you know, they're not that bad of a team. I know they're 6-6, but, you know, all the games that they've played, they've been in pretty much a majority of them. But I'm going to go 35-24 and then Corey Butler-Burt.
All righty. And our third and final Ute Qs. So with your first look at Bearfield and Collette against Prairie View A&M, how far do you think this running Utes team can go? At Ute Fanatic, or Ute underscore Fanatic, second round of the tourney, .. Pac-12 tourney. we responded back with, you don't think we'll make it to the NCAA tourney? He followed that back up with a not confident until I see him at full strength against good competition. At Rick Capps, 3, round of 32 in the NCAA. So I think it could be mixed. Utah will really have to play well in the regular season to be a at-large bid for the NCAA tourney. I'd be shocked if we win the Pac-12 tournament. Obviously, that gets you an automatic bid. I think we're more of an at-large bid, but Utah really needs to play well. And, you know, if they lose a game, it needs to be by, you know, a point. And it needs to be against ranked teams, enable for us to get a Pac-12 or enable for us to get a NCAA tournament invite. What are your thoughts on the team, and how far do you think they can go?
You know, I think I'm kind of in the same boat. Where I need to see this team consistently play some, you know, some competition, rather than, you know, play a tough team and then play three or four kind of no-name teams. I want to see them, you know, consistently play some competitive teams, you know, and I think Pac-12 play will do that for them. I don't think they're going to win the Pac-12. I think they're going to be competitive. I think they'll be competitive enough to, you know, kind of be, you know, maybe middle of the road. I don't know if that will help him make the tournament or not, but that's just kind of how I'm feeling. I need to see a little bit more from this team competitive wise against, you know, Colorado or against these Pac-12 teams. I think that will definitely tell a lot of maybe what this team's all about.
Absolutely. And we'll be able to tell, you know, each game here in the Diamond Head Classic will tell us a little bit more about this team and how far they can go. So that is all we've got for our Ute Qs segment. So thank you everybody who participated. We greatly appreciate it. And again, if you have any questions for us that you want answered, we'll gladly talk about them on the show. Tweet us at Ute Talk Podcast, hashtag Ute Qs, UTEQS. And don't forget to look for our questions every day that we do the show, which is generally Monday night. So look forward to that. Moving right along here, and this is our final segment of the show tonight. We'll get into our breakdown / preview of the Foster Farms bowl game. And as my 88-year-old grandpa likes to say, the chicken bowl. So Foster Farms Bowl is being played at Levi's Stadium, which is in Santa Clara, same stadium that the Pac-12 championship game is in. It's the only postseason bowl game televised by Fox Sports in 2016. So very nice to see that Fox Sports apparently loves the Utes, whether it's Fox Sports 1 or 2 or just Fox, the national channel. So yeah. Great to see the love from Fox. This game is Wednesday, December 28th. It's 5:30 p.m. local time, so 6:30 p.m. here in Utah. And it's Utah, number 19 Utah versus the Indiana Hoosiers, currently sitting at 6-6. As I look at their wins here, so Indiana is part of the Big Ten. Big Ten is the conference that has Penn State, Ohio State, Michigan, Maryland, Michigan State, Rutgers, Wisconsin, Iowa, Nebraska, Minnesota, Northwestern, Illinois, and Purdue. So quite a few big teams a part of that conference. Indiana is 6-6 on the season. Their losses are against Wake, Ohio State, Nebraska, Northwestern, Penn State, and Michigan. And so a lot of, essentially you've got four of those losses are against top 10 opponents.
Yeah, and it's...
So what are your thoughts, Patrick?
It's not like they, it's not like they got blown out in any of those games, really. Mm-hmm. I mean, Michigan, I think they lost 20-10.
If I remember right, they were leading by halftime in almost every single one of these.
Yeah, and you know what? They were right in there. I know the Ohio State game, they lost by 21, but they were in that game till the end, pretty much. Penn State, I think they're
45-31 for that one.
So they play in a tough conference with some tough teams. And, I think this is a game that the Utes can't overlook because this, even though they're 6-6 and it's Indiana, they're still capable of coming in here and taking it to the Utes. And because, with their schedule playing against, the Wisconsins, the Ohio States, the Penn States, the Michigans, it's not like they're getting beat 70-0 or whatnot. So they're not a bad team. I mean, their quarterback, he's really turnover prone. I think he's thrown like 16 interceptions on the season. So that might be a good thing for the Utes defensive backs.
Yeah.
If they turn their head, then they might be able to get some picks. But, other than that, I think, their quarterback had over 3,000 yards passing. I think he had like 18 touchdowns, 16 interceptions. They do have a 1,000-yard rushing back as their running back, and then their leading receiver is close to 1,000 yards too, I believe.
Yep.
So it's not like they're that bad of a team. They were in, a lot of their games were fairly close. So it's going to be a lot tougher than a lot of people are thinking for the Utes, and the Utes definitely got to come to play.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, going into the fourth quarter against Penn State, they're actually leading that game against Michigan. They are leading at halftime. So, Indiana, their record doesn't fully explain how good or bad of a team they are. Because they have played well against tough, ranked competition in their conference. And like you said, so their quarterback, Richard Legault, 3,174 passing yards, 18 touchdowns, 16 interceptions. You've got Devine Redding, 236 carries, 1,050 yards, 6 touchdowns. And then their leading receiver is Nick Westbrook, 49 receptions, 915 yards, 5 touchdowns. So currently your spread is 6.5 points in Utah's favor. Excuse me. And so, I mean, Utah should win this game. It'll be a tough one to start. I think once Utah and some of their players kind of settle down, we'll see things. We'll see the offense really pick up. But defensively, it shouldn't be a big problem. Utah's defense is very opportunistic and should really take advantage of the turnover prone quarterback Legao. So we'll look forward to that.
Yeah, I mean, if Marcus Williams wants to showcase his ball hawking skills, he could definitely have a good game against this quarterback,
or absolutely
any of those DBs could definitely have a good game. But I'm interested to see how the Utes come out offensively. I know what to expect defensively. They're gonna come to play. Special teams wise, they'll come to play. But I'm interested to see how they kind of bounce back offensively, especially after losing to Oregon and and losing to Colorado and playing so horribly on offense. I'm interested to see how they bounce back, if they show something a little bit different, or are they just kind of gonna do the same thing, give it to Joe Williams, do a little spread here and there. I'd love to see him, like I said, utilize Corey Butler-Byrd. I mean, watching the Chiefs game yesterday, how the Chiefs utilize that Tyreek Hill guy. He's exactly similar to Corey Butler-Byrd, and I just don't understand why the Utes couldn't figure out how to utilize him more like the Chiefs utilize that guy, because that guy's fast and shifty, and when he scored, you think he scored like a 70-yard touchdown yesterday?
Yeah.
I just envisioned like Corey Butler-Byrd doing the same thing, and I'm like, why isn't that in the Utes playbook?
Yeah.
Why didn't they?
That was a great play.
They do that? But yeah, I'm just interested to see kind of what they do offensively, see if maybe, some of these younger guys get some playing time as well. But I do think it's going to be a pretty competitive game for the Utes. I don't think it'll be a blowout by any means.
Yes, absolutely. So Indiana, 6-6 on the season. And I know I said Utah earlier was 9-3. My mistake. I forgot one of our losses. Utah is actually 8-4. I apologize. But yeah, so that game, Foster Farms Bowl, the Chicken Bowl, December 28th, Wednesday, 5:30 local time, 6:30 here in Utah. And that is on Fox, regular Fox. And, so look for that game. I know some fans are kind of bummed out. it sucks because of the November collapses, but Whittingham will get those figured out. I have full confidence in his ability and the coach's abilities to figure out what's going on wrong there. Maybe it's, too many reps during practices in November. Maybe it's, too many reps earlier in the year, and so they're tired in November. Maybe it's the food they're eating. I have no idea at this point, but I fully believe that Whittingham will get it figured out, and we'll start to see, Utah playing in same stadium but different bowl game.
Yeah, and this is, one more chance for fans to go and support. There's some great seniors who, have played their hearts out for the Utes for years. Guys like Isaac Asiata, Hatfield, a bunch more, and this other
Williams.
Guy, William. There's people who might be leaving to the NFL early. Yeah. You never know. So this is, a chance for fans to go out and support these guys one more time, and send them off. Hopefully, cheer them on to a victory.
Absolutely, I will be there. I'm super excited. It'll be a fun little getaway, fun little drive to check out San Francisco. I know I went last year around the same time, but it'll be fun. I'm excited for this game. Do you have anything else, Patrick, that you want to add for our breakdown before we end the show?
No, just excited for this bowl game, and hopefully they'll end the season on a high note, and then excited to see what kind of recruiting class the Utes get, and then hopefully get winter over with and get spring ball here.
Absolutely. Yeah, couple recruits on Utah's radar should be making their decisions here in the next couple of weeks, so look for those. We'll tweet them out as well. But we will see you guys in a couple of weeks in the new year. So happy holidays and happy new year to all of you. And thank you for joining us on the show today and participating in our Ute Qs and listening in. So thank you from our audio engineer, Marty, Patrick, and I'm Andy. We will see you next time. And as always, go Utes.
Go Utes.
Thanks for listening to Ute Talk, brought to you by the Torn by Sports and Blog Talk Radio Networks. Find us on Twitter @UteTalk Podcast or email @UteTalk@gmail.com.